This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. I'm your host, Walter Rigobond. Joining me this morning is former Washington Capital, former Toronto Maple Leaf, Leaping Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Wally. I'm doing well, thank you.
Also joining us this morning is the ultimate Leafs fan, Mike Wilson. Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning? Mike? Oh, Owen, see if you can figure that one out to our listeners. Naz, unfortunately, won't be joining us this morning. We'll try and get Mike Wilson on the phone. And while we're doing that, Lou, we've got a lot of Jays talk today. We've got Matt Betts and Tyson Shuskewich of the Canadian Baseball Network. Interesting couple of games. We got a great result in Game 1, and then Dodgers pitching took over in Game 2 last night. So we'll get to the Jays. To our listeners, don't worry, we'll have a lot of Jays
Hello.
Talk. And Mike Wilson, are you
Hello.
With us? Mike? Owen, I don't think he can hear us, so let's see if you can figure that one out, Owen. Thank you. And also, later on in the hour, the Terminator himself, Tom Terminator Henke. We're looking forward to that. We're gonna have a blast. We'll get into some Leafs talk now, and most of the show we will be chatting about the Jays. Hopefully, we can get the ultimate Leafs fan and work out our technical difficulties. Lou, Leafs. I know the Leafs always tend to start slowly. We don't. Get too excited, but this, I don't know, hopefully we can get Mike Wilson on the phone. This seems a little bit off this year. How concerned should we be? I mean, we've got some injury troubles. We've sort of avoided that the last few years. Nylander's hurt, Tanev's hurt, Riley got hurt a bit. Some of the other teams in the division have gotten better, and you look at the standings this morning, and you got a couple of teams you never would have seen at number one and number two for the last few years. We're talking about the Montreal Canadiens and the Detroit Red Wings. Buffalo and Ottawa are doing pretty good. We lost one against the Sabres Friday night. Berube thought they played well, and we eked one out last night. Lou, your overall assessment of where we are.
Well, you know, it's more or less, it's just like the start of the year. I predicted that the Leafs were going to have a struggle to make the playoffs. I think they're using the excuse of Mitch Marner and the way things have gone so far as a little bit of a crutch here. You know, Ruby's coming out and saying that he's got to get Austin Matthews going. He's got to get Nylander to take more shots and score more goals. And you look at the line combinations last night, there was no way that anybody thought that you'd have Matthew Knies on a line with Tavares. I can't even remember who Matthews had on the left side of his on his line. So I think right now they're still in the early stages of trying to figure out what they have and who they have and how well they can put them together. But this is going to be a team that's going to struggle the whole year. Their defense is big and slow and old. And I remember Joe Bowen saying a few weeks ago that that's the typical defense that they had in 92, 93, I think, that mauled everybody to get to the semifinals. But this is a different era here. And if you haven't got defensemen that can move their feet and are very agile, you're really going to struggle. And you're seeing that teams are really putting a lot of pressure on the Leaf D right now and putting a lot of pucks on the net because really – they're not moving anybody out from in front of the net.
I think Mike Wilson, the ultimate Leafs fan, do we have you?
Yeah, you got
awesome.
Me now. Wally. Here, is, I'm here.
Isn't live radio wonderful? Anyways.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes, it is. Sure is. It sure is.
Anyways, thanks for our producer, Owen. Fine young man. He might finally we got it straightened out. Mike, you tend to be the voice of reason at this time of year when the rest of us all get jittery and excitable. We've been through this a few years, and you always do a good job of calming everybody down. You know, it's still early in the season, haven't finished 10 games. Most of the games have been at home. I'd really love to see how the Leafs perform when they got to go out of town, which hasn't necessarily been a bad thing the last few years. They've been a pretty good road team. But your assessment of their performance so far, like I said, you tend to calm the waters a bit. You know, some people are concerned about some of their performances, but Mike, your assessment of where we are.
Well, you know, I was listening to a couple. I got the last of some of Lou's comments, and I tend to agree with what he was saying. But I think a couple of things that could be a little concerning. Now, we do have to keep in mind there are some new bodies coming in the lineup, so there's an adjustment period, and people are going to have to learn new systems and all those type of things that we know about moving forward. But a couple of things that are a bit concerning for me is that, as I mentioned before, I've been on this show, and I asked a question out loud without really not knowing the answer, but we're starting to see a little bit of that is Austin Matthews as an example. Who really drove that line when he was playing with Mitch Marner? Was it him, the benefactor of Marner's elite playmaking ability, or was Marner the benefactor of Matthews' elite scoring ability? And the idea is that Matthews is one of the elite centers in the league who has more goals and assists every year, and that can't be the case. He has to be like John Tavares of 9 years playing in Long Island, where he made 15 goal scorers and the 30 goal scorers. And this is no knock on him. He just may not have that in him. And, you know, because that's the difference between great and elite. And that's what makes it the difference between a really good player and a Sidney Crosby or a Connor McDavid or a Leon Draisaitl, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the type of things that we have to find whether that's in his DNA or not to be able to do that. So that's one of the things that I'm going to be watching very closely. And so far, he's still got the puck is still like a on a string on a stick, no question. But he looks to be pressing a little bit, and he just doesn't have that outlet, meaning number 16, and that makes it much easier to defend against his line in that case. So that's one of the things that I think really has to step up, and I'll say this once again. You remember Mike Babcock never wanted those two to play together, and he basically cost him his job for that. The other thing is the DNA of the team, as they talked about Brad Tree Living changing it. I didn't like the response after Easton Kounder, rookie, got ran into the post a couple weeks ago, and there was no response. I remember Sam Bennett targeted, Matthew Nyes back in the playoffs a couple of years ago and put him out, and nobody did anything. And then again, the other night with Stallard's getting ran, and Stallard's actually stepping up and making comments about with tribute, which is well documented. Everybody's well aware of that. You can't have that. Like, I don't care. You go back to the 70s and the 80s. I don't care if you take a guy's head off and you get a 3-game suspension. Let the league know you're not going to put up with this anymore. They're just making themselves too easy to play against. I think Lou's comment about the defense, and we talked about this extensively last time I was on. I think the problem is there's no depth. There's not enough depth. And we saw what happened with Tanev and that Riley out. You can't let these guys take the pounding they're taking, like McCabe and Tanev as an example, and Riley. These guys have got years on those bodies. They can't take that pounding. They're going to break down. And we've seen examples of that already. So there are a couple of things that are a little bit disturbing. For Leafland, I think that need to be addressed. But it is early, as we said. But I think those are a couple of key things we have to see turn around very quickly, because you don't want to fall too far behind in this division,
yeah,
because
no kidding.
Every point's going to matter.
I echo your comments on the shot that Easton Cowan took. And we talked about it so much when Bennett took out Matthew Nyes in the playoffs a few years back. And now you got your star rookie, and someone gives him a shot across the face. And there's no reaction from anybody. I don't get it. I just, like, this is, I wouldn't call him a star rookie. He's not a star yet. But, you know, like there's got to be some pushback. You brought in the conversation, Stolarz, Mike. We talked a little bit about it last Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
and we talked about it because the comments were fresh right after the Seattle Mariners. And we actually I want to repeat an email I got from one of our listeners, and I'll ask you guys to address this comment from our listener Linda Leontis. I hope she doesn't mind me using her name. And if any other listeners do you want to interact with us, you're more than welcome to email us at nazandwally@mzmedia.com. This is what Linda sent me an email. I know that you are talking about the Stolarz post-interview now. Whether right or wrong his comments, how does that affect the dressing room? Does that bring the team together, or does it create tension and then negatively affects their play? Lou, I'll turn it over to you first, and then Mike, I'll ask you to comment on that. How does that affect the dressing room, and does that create tension? Lou?
It really doesn't, in the sense that Andy Stolarz more or less said what he believed in and what's happening in the thing. And really, when you want to call the players out sometimes, and he's just more or less letting know that, guys, you know what, I'm doing the best I can, but I need a little bit of help from you guys. If these guys keep running me and keep bumping into me, then it's going to be harder for me to see the puck and stop it. So you guys got to do a little bit of your job. You know, and he did it also in a proper way. He didn't go out and really throw any names out there individually. But he did make a point, and I think it's going to bring the defensemen together and then say, okay, listen, guys, we looked at the film and we're seeing this. So, but another thing, I want to bring up what Mike said. I really liked last night what Brian McCabe did. Jake McCabe.
Jake McCabe, yeah.
Great.
That after he took a run at Byram, he took on Tuk right off the bat. And he has to play that way on a regular basis. He said it in his interview. He has to get that mean streak back in him because for whatever reason, it has left him. That was one of the reasons why they got him from Chicago. He was a big mobile defenseman, but he had a little bit of a mean streak in him, and he's got to bring that game out on a regular basis.
Mike, going back to the Stolarz comments, does it affect the dressing room? Does it create tension? How does the rest of the team react to that?
Well, I mean, the rest of the team, I mean, your goaler is going to step out and make that comment. You know, right off the bat, you have to respect him saying that. Now, should he have done it behind closed doors? I think probably a little bit more. But when you get a microphone stuck in your yap right after a game and it's the heat of the moment and you're excited and you're, you know, anxious and all that stuff, things that are just going to roll off your tongue. So people have to take that into account. And all the players are put in that same position. But I don't think it can divide the dressing room. Is there going to be petty jealousies amongst the dressing room, amongst certain players saying certain things or getting more plus than other guys? Of course, it goes on in every office in Canada and across North America. And so things are going to happen in the dressing room. But I think, if anything, something like this can galvanize the team. And I believe that, especially when he stands up and takes a leadership role. And he did, you know, as Lou said, he didn't really address anybody. It was very clear that it was Nylander who was pointing out in with his lazy back check in overtime that they scored on. So, I mean, that is going to be a frustration. But he should be called out. I mean, he called out one of his teammates on the bench a couple years ago in the playoffs. So that's not a bad thing. Lou can tell you there's fights going on in the practices all the time. And players are always, as long as they take it to the ice and play as a unified team, it'll work. And I think, if anything, as long as he doesn't make it consistent and then the coach takes it over there, and I'm sure Chief pulled him aside and had a chat with him and sure addressed it with the team. But I don't think it's a bad thing. If it's anything, it shows a little bit of passion. It shows that he cares.
Lou, on the positive side, Johnny Tavares, man, he's still, he's can make an argument. He's been their best player so far this season. Scored his 499th last night in overtime to win the game. And is about to hit 500. Let's dwell a little bit on what we've seen is positive. He seems to have brought the same game he had last year. Looks pretty good out there.
You know what, Wally? It's, you know, John Tavares is always going to be an enigma here. Here's a guy that's been in the league for 15 years. He's put up great numbers every single year. He hasn't slowed down. Obviously, you know, he's got 499 goals right now. Every single season with the Leafs, he's come out strong. He's done a lot of things that you never expected him to do. the year after. But what I want to see from John, I want to see him more or less, and I know it's really early, I want to see how he carries this on at the end of the year and into the playoffs, because what I look at, when I look at a player like that over his whole career, is he a winner? There are a lot of players that put up those kind of numbers, and when it comes down to crunch time, you don't hardly ever see them. And then there are players that put up less numbers, but are always in the forefront every single time when you need them and when the team needs them most, going down the stretch and in the playoffs.
Mike, your reaction to Johnny's play so far?
Well, I think like you expect, it comes to the point that he is so consistent in the way he plays. It almost, you just almost take it for granted. But there was a play in the third period last night where the puck was dumped in from the Leaf end to the Buffalo end. And he chased the defenseman from his own end and went hard. It was like a skating drill. And he jumped on him, won that battle for the puck against the boards. And that puck should have been cleared easily. And nine times out of ten, a defenseman saunters back, you know, takes the puck and makes it up the ice. And he created a scoring chance. Now, you're sitting on the bench as a player and a young guy, and you're watching that, and you're watching a mid-30s guy play like that. How can that be inspirational for you to try and pick your game up? I mean, if anything, this guy, as Lou said, he's an enigma. I mean, the way he just comes up every game, he's so focused, so dialed in. And I'll tell you, he can play in any team, any time that I'm involved with, because that's just the type of heart and soul you want to see from a player. And if the rest of the players don't pick up on it, then shame on them.
Got a few minutes before we go to break, and there's another team that's near and dear to the Nats and Woolley Sports Hour that's coming off some concerning performances as well. Of course, I'm talking about my beloved and Naz's beloved Buffalo Bills.
And mine.
And Mike Wilson's beloved Buffalo Bills. Lou, can I say they're your beloved Buffalo Bills?
No, you really can't, but you know what? I keep an eye on Shaw Lester. I'm not a Buffalo Bills basher.
Okay, so let's get into this. They've lost two in a row. Can't say they've looked they haven't looked really good in those two games. They're up against the Carolina Panthers today. They have not had a three-game losing streak since 2018. Carolina's on a three-game winning streak. Bills look weak at safety. They look weak at wide receiver. The last couple of games, they've been off. Although under the current Super Bowl odds, as per one of the sites I've gone on, they're still the third favorite. I don't quite understand that. But you got KC and Detroit at the top of the heap, and then Buffalo, and then Green Bay. I'm not so sure I'd be putting on money on them as the third favorite right now. But since they're your beloved Buffalo Bills, Mike, I'll turn it over to you first. Your thoughts on the Bills? You know, we talked about being concerned about the Leafs. I got to tell you, Mike, I'm concerned about the Bills.
Well, as a long, long suffering Bills fan myself, if you go way, way, way back to the first Super Bowl and the Super Bowl they should have won on the ride white, that it's almost sort of eerily sneaking back in, because that's the game they should have won. And if they won that one, they probably won another Super Bowl before they were in. But that started that trend of, you know, just one loss after the other. And if you go back to the 32nd a couple of years ago against KC, it's almost eerily very similar, that it's just sort of been a bit of a downhill spiral since, once they get into the playoffs, that things just seem to go the wrong way. You address the secondary with the Bills being weaker this year. They've run into some rough injuries in the middle of the linebacking spot. They've run into some problems there also. They don't have a deep threat, so that makes it much easier to defend against Allen, because they can contain him a little more, so it doesn't give as much running room as he's had in the past. So I think those are a couple of things that you touched on, which I think are really predominantly standing out as far as they go. And if they don't address that, they're going to probably scuffle through the year. And you see New England, but no longer just an automatic two-pointer. They are now actually a real threat. So it's going to be a struggle for the Bills for the rest of the year, but I think they can turn around, because with Josh Allen behind the ball or behind center, you always have a chance.
On that note, we're gonna take it to break. We've got so much Jays talk. We've got Tom Henke coming up. We've got Matt Betts and Tyson Shushkowicz of the Canadian Baseball Network. And before we take it to break, I just want to let our listeners know Pizzaville's got some great World Series specials on going on. The fastball pickup special, the hit it out of the park special. It's the really big pickup special, 18-inch extra-large three-topping pizza for $19.99. It's a pickup special. It's bigger than two medium pizzas. And, of course, they've got still got their great Pinza Romana collection going on. Sourdough pizza, it's fantastic. World Series, always a great time for pizza and beer and that type of thing. Get around and watch the games with some special people. So Pizzaville's the place. Order from Pizzaville. We're going to take it to break, and then we obviously want to talk some Jays. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville surprised the big pizza conglomerates by introducing Pizza Romana. It's a crispy Italian sourdough crust that's oval-shaped with gourmet pizza toppings. The big pizza conglomerates complained because they don't have the Pizza Romana sourdough crust. I guess that's just sour grapes. Order your Pizza Romana at pizzaville.ca or on our app.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
Durham Region, the wait is almost over because Mint Inc. is coming to Ajax. Whether you're a collector, player, or just love the thrill of the chase, Mint Inc. has you covered with the hottest sports cards, Pokemon, and TCG releases. From live box breaks to tournaments and exclusive drops, there's something for everyone. Follow Mint Inc. on social media or visit mintinc.ca for updates on their opening and all the events planned. Mint Inc. Ajax, coming soon to Durham Region. Get ready to collect, trade, and play.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one superfan to another.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live from Liberty Village in downtown Toronto. We're pleased to welcome to the show from the Canadian Baseball Network, Matt Betts and Tyson Shushkowicz. Matt, good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning, guys. How was everybody doing after the first two games?
Well, we were great yesterday morning, not as great this morning, but we'll get into it. Tyson, how are you this morning?
I'm good, even after last night.
Hey, listen, we're still tied. Anyways, I just want you guys to know we're thrilled to have you on. You're doing great work, reporting baseball, the Jays, and amateur baseball, and a lot of great work you're doing in baseball in Canada. But your role today, I don't know if you know what your role is, but you're going to be doing Mike Timlin and Dwayne Ward impersonation because you're our setup guys for Tom Henke. So we got Tom coming on right after you. So so you're Mike Timlin and Dwayne Ward this morning, guys. Let's get into it, Matt. Your assessment, it's been a tale of two teams. batting, the batting team won on Friday night and the pitching team won last night. An incredible performance by Yamamoto, but an incredible performance by the Jays bats on Friday night. Give me your assessment of where the Jays are. Are we exactly where we would want to be? And how do you see this playing out in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'd get anyone in the organization to necessarily say this, but I think the Jays are pretty happy here with the split here at home. Obviously, when the first game was big, kind of set the momentum, but and then, like you said, Yamamoto last night, he does what aces do and kind of took over the game and won the game for them, frankly. But I think, you know, after two games, you go back to L.A., tied 1-1, and especially with some of the expectations and some of the narrative around this series, I think you're pretty happy being 1-1.
Tyson, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Yamamoto was able to kind of do what aces are supposed to do, but also the Blue Jays, you can tell they're kind of not having a good day if they're striking out a ton. Right, like we've always seen the Jays be so contact heavy, laying off the tough pitches and just fighting counts and getting them in their favor. And when you can get them off their game like that, like Yamamoto was last night, like that's just a recipe for success for the opposing team. So I mean, at the end of the day, two complete games in the postseason is not an easy feat, and he just continues to rack it up. So they'll have to go back to the drawing board for the next time they potentially face him.
Lou, I'll turn it over to you.
Gentlemen, the difference between game one and two, the Jays bats more or less fouled off a lot of pitchers. And noticed yesterday with all the strikeouts that Yamamoto had, are they having a tough time picking up one of his six pitchers? Because he did a great job of mixing them all up yesterday, and it seemed like his split-finger fastball was dropping about maybe 8 to 12 inches.
Tyson, first you, and then I'll turn over to Matt.
Yeah, I don't know if it was so much they weren't picking up all his pitches, but Yamamoto was just executing to, like, perfection, right? Like, he wasn't missing over the heart of the plate like we've seen, and even when it was, you know, a 90-plus mile-per-hour fastball, and they just weren't ready for it because of all the offerings he had. And I think when you look back at game one, like Blake Snell, he was throwing okay, but he wasn't as crisp, right? Like, he made a couple mistake pitches, he walked a few. And then the Jays really lit up the bullpen when they were making mistake pitches, right? So I think Yamamoto just kind of executed his game plan to perfection, and the Jays weren't able to kind of back it up with all that he has. And again, that just speaks to the volumes that he is, you know, 27-year-old ace that just gets paid the big bucks to do exactly what he did last night.
Matt?
Yeah, I don't think it was so much, you know, one pitch necessarily, but the fact that he does have six pitches, and like Tyson said, he executes at such a high level. It kind of reminds you of the old school ace, you know, going back 20 years, a guy that can, you know, give you nine innings and expects to not come out of the ballgame. So, and on Friday night, you know, Snell was a little erratic early. They really worked him, and that's kind of been the game plan for the Jays offense, you know, in this series. They need to work the starting pitcher to get to that bullpen. And Yamamoto was so good. I think it's just one of those games where you tip your cap and kind of move on and prepare, like Tyson said, prepare for the next time that you're going to see him. But kind of kudos to Yamamoto last night.
Yeah, certainly. In the last 20 hitters, he only had 69 pitches. That was pretty remarkable. Mike, I'll turn it over to you. Go ahead.
Well, guys, I just my thoughts, and I'll see if you guys concur or not. But I mean, baseball, like any other sport, as we saw, you know, against Seattle, is, you know, walk, a swing, and a couple swings, and you win a game. So I think if anything, what the Jays can take away from that is if you've seen the first inning, runners in scoring position. They had them in position to score runs, and they could have possibly with one swing in the bat. And I know all those things that go along with it, but you know, they were that close. And then again, they were walking two swings away from taking the lead late in the game. So I'd have to imagine, to your point at the beginning, is that they have to walk away from this with the split feeling pretty good that they were that in this game, and it did go get away from them at the end, but they were in it right to the very end. So if anything, there should be a very positive outlook moving forward.
Certainly, we look looking forward. It doesn't necessarily get any easier for the Jays, mind you. You know, having knocking out the Dodger pitcher in game one was an accomplishment. But you know, you got Tyler Glasnow coming back in game three for the Dodgers, and look at his numbers in the postseason: .69 ERA. 13.1 innings, one earned run, 18 strikeouts. So, you know, it doesn't get that much easier in game three. And then you got Ohtani. on the mound in Game 4, coming off a performance of the performance from the ages, as we called it last Sunday, 10 strikeouts and 3 home runs. So it doesn't necessarily get any easy, not much easier for the Jays, but if there's one thing about the Jays that they've learned this year is they've learned to overcome adversity. And, you know, they had a good pitcher that they knocked out in Game 1, so... Matt, first you, and then you, Tyson. Line us up for games 3 and 4. What are the Jays looking at? What obstacles are in their path?
Yeah, 2 more good starters, like 2 more aces. The Dodgers are rolling out, you know, 4 of them here. But I think it's important, you know, after a game like Game 2, to kind of stick to your process and stick to your approach, and really, you know, make Glasnow work, kind of like you did Snell in Game 1. That, you know, it can be easy sometimes when you get an outing like Yamamoto to get chasing the game a little bit and trying to force some things, but that's not what this team has done. It's a deep lineup, and they really need to work the starting pitchers. And if they do that, they're going to give themselves an opportunity. Like you said yesterday, even they had some opportunities, and when you face pitching of this caliber, you really have to capitalize on them. So, like I said, I think they're in a good spot. Split. I mean, even if you win 1 in LA, you're coming back to Toronto. So, you know, I think they're in a pretty good spot.
Tyson.
Yeah, I think, and Matt kind of touched on it, is the Blue Jays playing their game, right? Like, Tyler Glasnow is a fantastic pitcher, but he's got some warts to his game too, right? Likes to be a little bit wild at times. He's got 8 walks this postseason, and I think it just goes back to the mentality of if the Jays stick to their game plan, you know, that's where the success is going to come from. When they start to kind of expand away and try to, you know, be power hungry, happy, and not playing, you know, double to the gap and, you know, getting the odd home run here, like that's how they win these games. And I think if they can come in to Dodger Stadium, face Glasnow, you know, just keep fouling off those pitches like we talked about here and, you know, putting them in play, making those at-bats tough, like that's how I think you get to Glasnow, right? And the Jays saw him earlier this season and he struck him out, you know, struck the Jays out 8 times. And that's just something you're going to have to, you know, monitor as you keep going forward. And you're going to have to lean on your veteran guys and Scherzer and Bieber here to start you off in a hot direction going into Los Angeles.
Tyson, what adjustments do you see Schneider making in Game 3, if any?
I don't see anything crazy except for whether or not Bichette's going to be playing. I mean, that's kind of the biggest question mark, is whether or not he's going to be starting or potentially a late inning replacement. I would think he's probably going to start unless something, you know, injury-wise is going to keep him on the bench. But you're at a point now where your best players have to be on the field, and you know, everyone battling something, right? Like Dalton Varsho's probably not 100% right now. George Springer's been hit so many times. Ernie Clement's been battling. And it's at a point now where these guys got to be in the lineup if they want to win. And you're going to take Bichette over Kiner Falefa just because of his bat, right? And his ability. And that's, I think, the biggest thing, right? You got a righty on the mound. You're going to still see Barger and you're going to see Lucas. And you're going to, you know, the biggest question mark is just whether or not you're going to see Bichette or not.
Lou?
I know Bichette's not 100%, but is it a good idea, or was it a good idea to put him in the lineup because of his mobility? And obviously they gave him a night's rest last night because his knee is pretty sore over maybe another position player or a reliever.
Matt?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's, you know, one of the best hitters in the league. You know, he reaches, you know, close to 200 hits every season, it seems like. And, you know, yeah, putting him at second, maybe a little bit questionable, but that kind of comes down to how comfortable they are putting George Springer in right field or left field. But, yeah, I think anytime you have a bat, they call it quality of Bo Bichette, and you're facing pitching as good as the Dodgers have, I think you have to get him in the lineup.
Mike?
Yeah, and I mean, everybody's addressing all the same points, but, I mean, I agree because with Bichette in the lineup, obviously, with his bat, it makes it a little, they have to be a little bit more cautious pitching to Guerrero in front of them. So they can't really go around him with him coming behind with this deep threat ball that he has. So I think that if you can get him in a lineup and he's good enough to play, he has to play.
Matt, I know you were at the game, if I'm not mistaken, Friday night. Tyson, I'm not so sure. But Matt, just describe what it was like in the Rogers Center.
Yeah, I got to go as a spectator, and it was pretty special. I would put it at, you know, number one on the sporting events that I've been to. It was just electric. And, you know, it's funny, you look, I got caught looking around a lot, and you know, you see these videos of 1992 and 1993, and then you kind of see that you're living it. So I think it's pretty special for Jays fans to be able to experience this. No matter what, how the series goes, obviously they want to win, but, you know, it's just a really special atmosphere. It was loud, it was chaotic, I think there is a home field advantage here for the Blue Jays.
And Tyson, don't know if you were at either in person, either two of the games, but I'm sure you watch them. Pretty special stuff down at the Rogers Center. What's and perhaps you have a sense of how this team has captured. I know it's just a baseball game, and sometimes we tend to try and take it beyond baseball, but. You know, pretty thrilling last night when the Armed Services guys they roll out that huge Canadian flag and they're standing at attention and they're saluting and the police officers, just the whole remarkable atmosphere of World Series and this team has captured the country. I mean, you know, I was around in 92, 93, you know, and we're this is Zoomer Radio, guys. We're a little bit probably older than you guys. I certainly remember 92, 93. And Mike, I'll turn this over to you as well. This one seems different. It's with the Jays seem to have captured the country in a way that I've never seen before. You know, 92, 93, the Expos were still around. But this is how the Jays have, how this has resonated around the country is pretty remarkable. Tyson, first you and then you, Matt.
Yeah, I got to watch the game at home with family and friends. So it was a pretty strong moment. You know, you could really feel the atmosphere that Matt was kind of describing there. And I think what makes this postseason run so special is that when you look over just the span of a year, like a year ago, this was a team that was fire sale at the trade deadline, you know, whimpering into the end of the year, just putting some rookies out there to see what was happening next year. Fans were calling for certain management heads and you were really on the hot seat, right, when it came to Guerrero and Bichette and the future of this club. And now you're, you know, fighting Ticketmaster and all these other sites for World Series tickets, right? Like that's such a strong swing that I think everyone's just kind of gotten behind, right? And, you know, especially since you're facing the Yankees, all the Yankees are a playoff team, right? And then you beat them and it's like, oh, okay, now it's the Mariners and they're a strong team too. And we could see them, you know, the West Coast fans can go and see them too down there. And, oh, and then we beat them. Now we're in the World Series, right? Like it went from being something that you would just, you know, hook up the PlayStation and play the show for in the World Series moments to now being real life. And I think a lot of fans, not, you know, the diehard fans, but then also the casual fans are really getting behind it. And I think there's quite a few people that you talk to now. It's like, you know, I'm not the biggest baseball fan, but I watched that Blue Jays game the other night and that was, you know, something special. So it's definitely, I think it's got to do with the big swing of things and also just how everyone's just getting so behind, you know, Canada's lone baseball team.
Matt, we've got about a minute left in this segment, and then you've got the manager's coming out to you with the ball, and we're going to turn it over to Tom Hinkie. But Matt, your thoughts on what an incredible energy that the Blue Jays have created around the country.
Yeah, I can say this is the first time I've ever set up Tom Hinkie, but yeah, I just think, and I think social media plays a big part of it, right? You can really see from coast to coast how this team is rallying behind, you know, the city, the team, the organization, everyone top to bottom. And I think the other thing is that this is a really likable team, right? There's not too many guys that you look and you're like, oh, that's an easy guy to dislike, you know, whether it's Vladdy and how much it means for him to play for this organization, or Ernie Clement or Nathan Lucas or George Springer, just the energy they bring. Really, you know, radiates off the fan base. And I think it's kind of a give and take, and it's really benefited them, I think, so far.
Anyways, we're going to thanks so much, Matt. Thanks so much, Tyson. You guys are doing some fantastic work at the Canadian Baseball Network, not just from a professional reporting on the Blue Jays, keeping us all up to date on all the great Canadian players, the next generation that are working their way up. To all our listeners, if you really want to read some great material on baseball, check in at the Canadian Baseball Network and check in with Matt Betts and Tyson Shuskiewicz. Thanks, guys.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the series.
We certainly will. Thanks so much. We're going to take it to break, and we're back with the Terminator.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville introduced...
Pizzaville?
Right. When Pizzaville introduced Pinza Romana. It's a crispy sourdough crust, oval-shaped, with gourmet pizza toppings.
Pizza toppings.
It's so light and delicious, once you try it, Pinza Romana will be all you can think about. Call Pizzaville for...
Pizzaville?
Call Pizzaville for Pinza Romana, or visit pizzaville.ca.
Pizzaville.ca.
Passion. It drives entrepreneurs, small businesses, and fast-growing companies. And passion inspires KPMG Private Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Private Enterprise is the number one private company advisor in Canada, navigating complex challenges to help you stay one step ahead of the competition. Search KPMG Private Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
MDF Mechanical has something in common with the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. A full-service mechanical company to building owners and developers in the GTA, we've been installing and servicing electrical, plumbing, and HVAC systems since 1986. And sometimes, Naz accuses Wally of blowing his own hot air. When we're not serving customers, the winning team at MDF Mechanical is listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour every Sunday along with you. So, let's enjoy the rest of the show. From one superfan to another.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
If you're into Pokemon, sports cards, or pop culture collectibles, Mint Inc. is the only place you need. Right off Highway 400 in Vaughan, Mint Inc. is the GTA's home for live events, trading experiences, and the best selection of cards and collectibles. They're an authorized PSA dealer, always bringing you the latest releases, and they're always buying cards, too. From Pokemon packs to sports slabs, toys, and more, Mint Inc. has it all. Check them out in Vaughan or visit mintinc.ca. Mint Inc. Collect. Play experience.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. We are absolutely thrilled to have on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour the Terminator, Tom Henke. Tom, we can't thank you enough. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Good morning, guys.
Thanks so much for joining us. It's certainly a privilege for us. So many great memories of your time with the Toronto Blue Jays. You're so much a part of Toronto baseball. You're so much a part of Canadian baseball. You're a member of the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame. You're a member of the Ontario Sports Hall of Fame. You're a World Series champion, and so much part of Canadian baseball. So many memories you left with us, Tom. Thanks so much for joining us. Just let our listeners know. I'm sure they'd be thrilled to catch up. Let us know what Tom Henke's up to these days.
Well, I'm just being a grandpa. I've got 12 grandkids. I've got I had four children, and I've got 12 grandkids. So, being a grandpa, enjoying my family. I still do some things in baseball with Toronto when they ask, and the Cardinals, and the Rangers occasionally, so I keep busy with that. I have my farm that I go down and work, not every day, but I go down there quite a bit and work, so staying busy. It's been good. Retirement, I tell people when they can retire, do it, because it's a lot better than working.
Okay. Mike Wilson?
Yeah, Tom, I guess I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up, you're being very modest and not touching on one of your other post-baseball careers, and in that, in the form of being a hockey coach. Now, the guys in the Markham Oldtimers driving through Europe, you were their coach, and you were undefeated. And, I mean, never mind the level of excellence at the Skydome or at the Rogers Center. You're on the level of excellence at the Duchess and Markham, so let me tell you, you are highly regarded.
Well, there's hidden talents everywhere, and you know, mine popped up unexpected. Didn't know a lot about hockey, but the guys were very patient with me, and we had a great team, and we were able to go over to Europe and have a lot of fun. It was one of my favorite memories post. Post baseball was getting to travel with the guys, John Brio and all the guys from Canada, and we had a lot of fun over there. And my wife and I went over and traveled with them because I'm not a very good traveler, so I like being in baseball. It kind of spoiled me that way, and so it was kind of nice to have somebody there to dot all the I's and cross the T's, make sure everything went right. But it was definitely fun.
Lou?
Tom, being an ex-old athlete like yourself, I don't think I'd ever call playing professional sports a job, because if it came to being a job, it'd be time to get out of it. But one question I want to ask you, since you were a hard thrower and coming in late with Dane Ward, is that, why aren't pitchers going high and hard or up in the strike zone lately? I notice everybody is more or less worrying about the low part of the plate, and they're more or less, they're, I guess most of the pitchers are on the low part of the plate to get people. Why am I not seeing relief pitchers that are coming in high and hard?
Well, you know, I don't understand that either. Maybe they're not teaching that anymore. You know, personally, I would get ahead of guys, and a lot of times I'd go up in the strike zone. They call it climbing the ladder. And, you know, you just because there's not a whole lot of players that can handle a really good, high, hard fastball. And, you know, occasionally you run into them. A guy I remember, Mike Eastler, was a high fastball hitter that didn't matter how high and how hard you threw it, he could hit it. But those are few and far between, and so I don't understand that. You see a few guys starting to attack the top of the strike zone. I've been watching, and I watch quite a bit. It's something that's kind of a lost art, that, and learning how to pitch inside. I watched the kid last night from the Dodgers, and he was pitching inside. He would knock guys back, and he really reminded me of a kind of an old school type pitcher. And he worked all his pitches. He really threw a good game against us, even though I hated to see us lose, it was kind of enjoyable to watch him pitch, you know, because he really did a great job, and as did Gausman. He matched him pitch for pitch for quite a while, but a couple pitches that maybe weren't terrible, but guys are pretty good, so they hit him out of the ballpark and gave him the win.
We're talking to Tom Henke. Tom, you spent quite a bit of time in Toronto, 1985 to 1992. You were a member. You came in just when the Jays took their run to the top of Major League Baseball, and you had a great run, and the Jays had a great run for so many years, culminating in the 92 World Series for you. Looking back on that 92 team, what any great memories, any great stories? It was certainly remarkable. It was a remarkable team with a lot of talent that captivated a city as well.
Yeah, we went into spring training that year. I remember that, and we knew we had a good team. We were solid in our starting staff. Our bullpen was good. Our hitting, our defense, we knew we had a good team. And I remember, people saying anything less than a world championship would be a failure. So we went into that season knowing that you know, this is it. You know, although I played on some great teams before then, but, you know, we just clicked it all together. Seemed like everybody knew their roles. We were able to, you know, we clicked as a team. And when we took the field, guys pulled for each other. There was very, very little selfishness, I think. Everybody just kind of wanted to win, and we were able to put it all together. That was a great, great run. Great teammates, you know, Jack Morris and Dwayne Ward and Mike Timlin, and I could go right down the line. You know, we had a great team, and we beat a great team that year in the Atlanta Braves with their pitching staff. You know, I don't know that we were even favored in that World Series, but it was pretty evenly matched, and it was a time that in my life I'll never forget, being able to bring the first World Championship to Toronto and in the country of Canada. It was very special to me, and always will be.
Mike?
Tom, I got a two-parter for you, and it goes to, you just touched on about hitting and pitchers. It's always been a bit of an anomaly why pitchers can't hit. So the first part of the question is, with Ohtani, who may be a unicorn, as they call him, or this freak of nature, do you think that we may see more of that in the future, with kids focusing more on hitting and pitching, as we've seen him do? But again, he is a one-in-a-lifetime type of player. And two, talk about your experience as a hitter, as a pitcher.
Well, my experience as a hitter, we'll tackle that one first. I got one at bat in my major league career in St. Louis, and I did foul off 12 pitches, and finally flew out to right field to a standing ovation in Busch Stadium, because they put on the board Tom Hinkie's first at bat in 16 years, and you know, as kids we grow up. You know, your pitchers are a lot of times the best athletes on the team. Mm-hmm. And you know, even myself, I was a hitter too until I got into college, and then it gets more specialized, you know, you know, they want you to concentrate on just pitching or just hitting. They don't want you to have to think about both. And Ohtani's kind of, like you said, a unicorn. I expect him eventually to settle in on one or the other, you know, but maybe not to do both, because he's going to get a little older. Right now he's a young kid and strong and everything's good, but he's already had arm surgery, so it'll be interesting to see how he progresses, you know, but you know, guys could hit. Pitchers could hit. And I knew a lot of guys that pitched were great athletes. And if given a chance, you just don't get that chance anymore. I finally did when I went to St. Louis. And, you know, we took batting practice. I took batting practice for the first time. We learned how to bunt. We learned how to do all those things. And, you know, I'm just glad I didn't have to do it for 11, because I think 0 for 1 is not a good batting average.
So. Lou?
How's your career going now? How's the farming business? And more or less, how do you keep your grandkids busy, or more or less, do they tire you out now?
Well, I'm just loving it. You know, grandkids are a tremendous gift from God to us. I think they all think I will walk on water, because I spoil them as best I can, and you know, it's just good. It's good being retired. I wouldn't trade it. You know, people say, well, you could have played a year or two more or whatever, you know, but I got to spend time with my kids while they were in high school. I got to spend a lot of time with my dad before he passed, you know, so and my mom. I mean, my parents, they were wonderful people. They helped keep me grounded and hopefully, you know, led the right lifestyle. And so I was able to do all those things. You know, playing with Nolan Ryan in 93, You know, Nolan and I got to be friends, and you know, I asked him if he had any regrets and about playing so long. He said, yeah. He said, one regret is I missed a lot of things with my family. And, you know, I took that to heart because in 95, you know, I said, you know what? I'm not going to just hang on and hang on. Not that Nolan did hang on. I mean, he was productive up to the very end. But, you know, I said, I've always admired guys that could walk away with maybe just a little gas left in the tank. Carl Yastrzemski comes to mind, and there's a few others. But I thought, you know, 95 was a dream season for me, coming back, playing at home for the Cardinals, and, you know, winning the Rolle Age Relief Award, playing the All-Star game, collecting my 300 save in front of my family, you know, at home. And it was just something I felt was right, and so I walked away.
Are you talking about grandkids? Tom, as soon as this show's over, I'm running out of here because I got to go to my grandson's 5th birthday party.
Yeah, you better not miss that.
No, there's no chance. Anyways,
no.
Tom, I know we chatted briefly off the air, and you mentioned you're working on a book. So tell us all about that.
Yes, I am. I don't know what we're going to call it yet. David Jerome is an author here in Missouri, and a friend of mine in Canada started it, and he found out that it was a lot more to writing a book than just putting pen to paper and that type of thing. So he kind of bowed out, and David took over where Roger had started, and so... Yeah, I didn't really want to do it. I really didn't. I didn't think anybody want to read about me or whatever. And you know, the author, he told me, he says, listen, you know, don't do it to try to sell books or whatever. You know, you just do it for your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids to know what baseball was like when we played and to know what it was like to live in a town of 100 people, you know, and what we did and the things that normal people, hopefully people will be able to pick up the book and it will bring back memories of childhood or whatever that they did, the same thing that I did, because we're all just normal people on this earth. And I guarantee you people in Northern Ontario could pick up the book and say, hey, I did that as a kid too, you know, so I don't know that it'll be that interesting because I'm kind of a boring kind of guy, but, you know, it's been an adventure. And David wrote a book on Bill Verdon and Preacher Rowe, and he approached me and asked me if he could do my book. And I was like, well, all right, let's do it. So we're in the process. Hopefully by the spring of 2027, I think, is what we're shooting to have it done and ready, and hopefully people will pick it up and enjoy it or use it for firewood. So,
Tom, unfortunately, we only got about a minute left. Pretty tight on time, unfortunately, but I do want to get your assessment how you feel the balance of the Blue Jays Dodgers series is going to play out.
I think it's going to go all the way, 6-7 games. I don't think. You know, just watching Toronto, they've got a really balanced team and a young, old veterans. You know, they've got good pitching. Their bullpen solid. I think they could match up with anybody. And the Dodgers, of course, that speaks for themselves. I mean, they're really good. They showed it last night. I don't think the first game, I think there was a little rust maybe for them sometimes. And I thought I'd seen a stat somewhere where they said the team that sat out like that has never won. So, and I know sitting out is tough, and fighting out to the end is good. So I think it's going to be a great series. I'm pulling for the Jays all the way. I hope they bring another world championship home for Canada and the fans.
We've been talking to Tom Henke. Tom, we can't thank you enough. So many great memories of you in the Toronto area. And you're still beloved here in Toronto and across Canada. Thanks so much for joining us.
No, it's my pleasure. I have all my great baseball memories up there, and I try to get up as much as I can. So hopefully they'll bring it home, and next year's 50 years, so we'll celebrate.
Awesome. Tom Henke, thanks.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Mike Wilson, the ultimate Leafs fan, thanks so much for joining us, Mike. Always a privilege having you.
Great to be on. Thanks, Wally.
And Lou, can't thank you enough, brother. Thanks so much. We'll chat again next Sunday morning. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week. Go Jays! I hope we get to celebrate a World Series victory. That would be awesome. Have a great week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.